Hello and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. I am your host, James Gilmore, and joining me on this beautiful sun-kissed day, well, it's sun-kissed, I suppose. It's not that sun-kissed in here, because I'm in a tiny room with two tiny windows, although I can hear chirruping outside that indicates summer. How about you guys? Keith, Andrew, can you see sun from where you are?
I can't, because I'm in Manchester.
Oh, okay. It's grim up north, from what I hear.
It's nice and breezy today, in fact. It's much improved over recent weeks.
We had mad lightning storms. Like, did you get any of them?
Yeah. No. Did you not see it on the news? The station, which is a matter of yards from me, got hit by lightning. Was put out of action.
Yeah.
For a few hours. It sounded like a nuclear bomb had gone off. And I actually, it was at about 6:30 in the morning. I actually jumped out of my bed and ran over to the window to check that the world was still there. Because it didn't sound like any thunder I've ever heard. It was literal.
Thought you might have dived into a doorway or under a table or something. That's what you're supposed to do, isn't it?
I was in bed at the time, so okay. I could have just hid under the cover. Well, it was too hot for covers. So.
I would have just fallen out and wept, probably.
I did generally run to the window and half expect to see a big mushroom cloud appearing somewhere. It was absolutely bizarre. I've never heard anything like it, and I could not get back to sleep afterwards, which meant I was pretty moody for the rest of the day.
Oh, well, there you go. Peter Willington, how was it up where you were?
I also got woken up by the lightning and also the thunder, and I thought that there was some sort of raid going on, some sort of military raid, because I was in the middle of a dream and I woke up and there was like flash, 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 and that was the first thing, obviously, and then boom, 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 and all my windows were open because it was so swelteringly hot.
Yes.
So it was, and because I'm on the, I'm in the penthouse apartment in my flat building. It's just the top floor. It's a horrible apartment. I was basically in the middle of it, so I was like right up in the clouds, and it was all flashing around me and stuff.
So am I the only one who heard the thunder and lightning and thought, oh, there's thunder and lightning, whereas both of you went to like nuclear holocaust and military invasion?
Well, yeah, it's not something I tend to do usually, but it just didn't sound like any thunder I've ever heard. And to be honest, I think since living here, we only had a lot of thunder like twice.
I do like it when it happens. I still enjoy snow a bit, but thunder and lightning is the best ever. That kind of discharge of energy transferring from one thing to another.
This wasn't pleasant, I have to say. I'm a fan of thunder, but this wasn't. I was waiting for it to happen again, and it didn't, thankfully. But that's why I couldn't get back to sleep, because thinking this is going to go.
Well, you see, I'm not a sort of apocalyptic, oh, woe is me kind of person. I was just having a dream that I was in 80s cartoon Mask.
No!
And so, obviously, it was high tension stakes.
And I just remember the intro sequence. I think I had... Do you remember the helicopter, the green car that turns into a helicopter? I think I had that one.
That one was awesome. Did you have the robot that also...
No, it turns into a little motorbike.
Yeah. And the kid who rode him, who... First of all, a kid riding a sentient robot is a little bit strange when you look back on it. But also, he was such a dumb kid that at the end of every episode, it would always be like, oh, now, remember, if you're playing tennis... make sure to take your own towels and like
tennis towels.
Don't talk with strangers because some of them are bad. And like,
what you're
and
saying like, is he was very on message all the time. And
it was
that,
like
that
it was
you.
Super like if you're a member, if you're a real member of Mask, you don't cross the street without looking. Like, all right.
Like, we've lost about 80% of the podcast listeners now. Going Mask, what
everyone
are you
knows
talking
what Mask
about?
Is. No, everyone knows.
They
what
really
Mask
don't.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yes, you what? Do. Oh. You do. You're old enough to remember Mask.
You're a child.
I do not know what you're talking about.
What about? Okay, what about Action Force?
You've lost
is
me
that,
there,
is that
I'm afraid.
Bleach? What is that?
Guys, do you know what? I'm going to make my own Pocket Gamer podcast. For
where you talk about 80s cartoons that no one's heard of.
It's just going to be me, and I'm just going to be talking about Thundercats.
But everyone's heard of Thundercats.
All right, fine. I'll talk about Samurai Pizza Cats instead, then. How about that? Boosh. Don't know them.
Go to it. All right, then. Well, you can talk about that. We're going to talk about some news regarding the new model Nexus. We've also uncovered some truly harrowing screenshots of another Android-based console. We'll link you to it, and you've really got to see these pictures. Also, Pete's played some Killzone Mercenary on the Vita. He's going to tell us all about it in the news. But first, the update. Guess what, guys? Angry Birds has been updated again.
I thought you were about to start singing.
No.
Yeah, do it in a sing-song way. Go on, tell we get this story all of the time, James. You've got to keep it interesting.
Yeah, I suppose I've got to do either a variety of different accents or do it to melody or do it in the voice of Chaucer or something. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to do any of those things. Well, actually, it's Angry Birds Rio, not Angry Birds Vanilla. And they've got 50 new summer-themed levels. So it basically means there are going to be more levels with some sunshine and, I don't know, buckets and spades and that in the background, I guess. This brings the total of levels in Angry Birds Rio up to 250.
Jeez.
I know, which is quite impressive. I think there is going to be a Rio 2, because this is all tying into that Rio movie with the blue bird, isn't it?
I thought it was a product placement for the soft drink when it came out.
Oh, okay. No, it's not that. It's got to do with that animated Digimation movie thingy. And I think a sequel's on the way, so they're going to pump some new levels in it to keep it relevant and active, I suppose.
Actually, I don't know if it came at the right time, because this was the first... Was this not the first one they did after Angry Birds, the first...
Was it not Seasons?
Game?
Wasn't Seasons?
No, Seasons.
Seasons were, yeah. It seems to be, actually, the levels in Rio are much better than they are in Angry Birds. I always thought Rio's the better game, actually.
Okay.
But whether it needs more levels or not, I don't know.
It's got more monkeys. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing depends on your stance on monkeys, I suppose. But, but you can download more levels for it, and probably more monkeys too, so crack on there. If you are a GTA fan, however... then we suggest you amble on over to both the App Store and the Google Play Store and pick up GTA Vice City, GTA 3, and GTA Chinatown Wars for about 33% off, I reckon. It's down to £1.99 for each of those three games, or $2.99. And usually they retail about $2.99, $5, I think. Rockstar have said they're doing this in preparation for Grand Theft Auto 5. I don't know if that's... really true. I don't think they really need to raise the profile of that game any more than it already is, to be honest, but whatever. You can get those games on the cheap now. I have just checked, incidentally, that they are still on sale, and they are. I suspect if you're hearing this on Friday or Saturday, it might only be up for another couple of days and then it'll be down, so grab it quick. You can also get Max Payne Mobile for the same price, but it was a bit wank, so I would
that.
I might advise caution in that particular.
I would love to see that on the iTunes a bit wank in speech.
That's my box quote for that's a keeper, that one is. I'm looking forward to that day.
Now that we've gone all multi-platform, I think we can safely say that if you're going to buy one of these, you get them on Android and you stick a controller in, right? I mean...
and make it better.
Yeah.
In fact, the next section is going to be primarily Android. So let's go right on over to the news. So Google's gone and released another Nexus 7.
This is the Nexus 7 2. What do we call this?
Nexus 7.2. It's still the Nexus 7. They're just calling it... I think they're doing an iPad thing and just calling it the Nexus 7 and leaving it at that.
Why has no one made the old Xbox 720 joke about this and started calling it the Nexus 14 or whatever, the Nexus...
Yeah, well, no, the numbers on this one, I think, were directly related to their inches. So the Nexus 4 is the phone because it's 4 inches, and the Nexus 7 is 7 inches.
I know that. I didn't think they had 6 prototypes that never made it to the market or something. I just... I mean, the 360 element of Xbox was never anything to do with other than, you know, but yet for some reason that became the, oh, what should we call it? The 720? No, they're not going to call it that, guys. They're really not going to call it
I thought the Xbox 360 was 360 millimeters long, though. That's why I always...
Is that, Keith, is that why people call you Keith 4?
Ah, yeah. Thank you.
Are we talking inches?
You went for a slightly more generous number than the one I was going to go for. But I'm glad you stepped in there and took care of that for me.
It's a cold night.
I heard lightning. I got scared.
Do you know, we got. I know I'm derailing the conversation. Unlike most times, I'm derailing the podcast. But we got an email from a lovely lady who shall remain anonymous.
How's this going?
And she said that I really like the way that we've sort of gone multi-platform and all that sort of stuff, and you know, it was a really lovely email.
Oh yeah, I saw this.
And then I followed up with her and I said, you know, I do apologize that the last couple of episodes have been a bit smutty because Keith's been let off his leash. And she said, I do like a little bit of dirt in a brand new clean podcast. And I was like, do you know what, you're awesome. But
I've not been any smuttier than you. I'm always smutty.
Do you know, the amount of apologising to people I've had to do, Keith, for your smut, it has been zero, basically.
We don't apologise.
People seem to quite like it.
Anyway, Nexus 7. So what's changed about this new Nexus 7, nobody's asked. Well, it is a little bit slimmer, it is a little bit more HD, and a little bit more expensive. Precisely, it's the 16 gig model is now going to retail for £200, whereas previously it was doing like 169 or 159, they'd reduced it to. And the 32 gig model is now going to cost £230. They haven't given us any pricing on the 3G models yet.
Who is this one made by?
Asus.
It's Asus, yeah, what's done it.
That's strange, because like, I'm just looking at the picture of it that we've got on the story here, and it's shot of back, shot of front, shot of one leaning against the other.
That's what they always do. Google always do that.
That's what HTC do on theirs as well. It always looks really weird.
I agree.
HTC for it. It's a little bit weird. HTC's ones always have the time at 10:08 or whatever it is. I can't remember.
So this isn't the flagship, is it? This is a sort of cut price...
No, this is the one that sells.
Yeah, there is a Nexus 10, but that hasn't done half as well as this thing.
Right.
The Nexus 10, in fact, has done so bad. Anyone who's been watching Microsoft this week will know that Microsoft had to write down $900 million on the Surface RT, of which I own, because no one has them. And the Surface RT has outsold the Nexus 10.
Wow.
So the Nexus 10 has not done well at all. Actually.
When it comes to full-size tablets, people just get an iPad. That's what everybody does. They just get an iPad and screw everything else. The Nexus 7 was interesting because it was one of those first in-between kind of smaller tablets.
This is where Apple, the only area of the business where Apple follows and everyone else leads. It's interesting.
The iPad Mini came after this because this one sold like the hotcakes. But they have pimped it up a little bit. So the screen size now, you've got a 1920 by 1200 pixel display, which is better than your HD TV. And it's because it's a teeny tiny 8 inch, that's 323 pixels per inch, which, I mean, the iPad Mini is like 1024 by 7, whatever, 8, 758, whatever it is. It's you know, rubbish in comparison to this. They've also pimped up the inside, so you've got a quad-core 1.5 gigahertz Snapdragon processor and 2 gig of RAM. A little bit slimmer, don't know how much slimmer, they didn't say. What is it, 5 megapixel camera on the back. So basically it's just been improved in pretty much every capacity. A little bit more expensive, but still relatively cheap.
This looks I really want one of these, guys.
Well, I advised both my brother and my mate to grab one of these, and they both did. And I've now got an iPad, new iPad. But I still really like the look of them. The screens are great. And I know it's running Android, which makes Keith roll his eyes, but I quite like bits of Android.
I have nothing against Android in its native form, of which this is.
The Nexus form.
It's Android that's been bastardized by Samsung and HTC that I don't like. So
TouchWiz interfaces and all that.
Yeah, that's what I think absolutely... Well, it's what some people like about it, but I think it's what makes it look like a really bad Toyota, to be honest. And this this is if I was going to get an Android device, and I said this actually because one of our former guys, James, not you, used to work with us, had the original Nexus 7, and I had a brief go on it, and it was all right. And I thought if I was going to get an Android device, this would be the only one I would get, because it is Android as Google stroke God intended.
The God of Google. Google presumably is a subset of the God.
God. So Steve Jobs and Google. That's cool.
That's the hierarchy. That's the way it steps down. Well, you'll be able to get one of these brand new shiny Nexus 7s in the UK from September the 13th. Don't know when it's appearing in the US, and they haven't confirmed the pricing either. Well, moving on from a beautifully slim and lovely looking Android device to the most hideous Android device I've ever seen.
Oh my God, it looks like a DVD wallet that's half closed.
Oh, it's amazing. Yes, it really does. Okay, so you know the Ouya, right, listeners and fellow podcasters, which is one of them plug in the back of your TV Android home consoles. We're calling them unconsoles, sort of, because they're sort of mobile, but they're not. And, you know, they're kind of in a nether realm of categories. Since Ouya got ridiculously highly funded. A whole bunch of other ones have appeared as well. So you've got the GameStick, which still hasn't been released yet. It's about to be released, but it's basically the same thing, but in a USB stick form. So you just plug it into the back of your TV. And a couple of others have popped up too. The most recent of which has come from Mad Cat, the guys that do those controllers, third-party peripherals for consoles mostly. And they've come up with their own little box, which you plug into your TV. And holy hell, it is hideous.
This is horrid, isn't it?
Now, you've got to go to the site and see this. There'll be a link on the podcast story whenever we post it live on the site. I always make links to everything we're talking about now. Goes into the little story on which the podcast is posted. So you can click and find everything and all the images and all the stories. Go to it. You have to see this. Like Pete says, you look at it from the front and it does look like a CD wallet that kind of one corner of which is sticking up. For some reason, like someone's taken a billiard ball and put it inside it and left it in there in one corner. So it's just jutting up pointlessly, which I guess they're thinking it's kind of interesting and ergonomically weird and like, oh, it's zany and exciting and whatnot. However, the back of it. Now, there isn't a picture of the back of it I've seen here, but Harry linked, our writer Harry, linked us up on Twitter. And the back of it has got all the ports for, you know, a couple of USB slots and a HDMI out and the power out. And they look like they've been blasted into the back of the unit with a sawn-off shotgun. Like, it's like the most sort of scattershot, just we'll bung one there and we'll stick one here. And because apparently rulers are for pussies. So you just jam it in and one USB port's half hanging out and the other one's upside down and it's got a pigeon lodged in it. And it's ridiculous. It's the ugliest thing I've ever seen.
It is the physical manifestation of that'll do.
Yeah, no, it does look like it's been like, it looks like a temp unit, like a model that they put together while they're troubleshooting and everything before they release the actual thing. This is the actual release model. What do you think, Keith? Does this float your aesthetic boat?
No, well, nothing Mad Cats has ever made has ever been anything to look at. And look at their logo for starters. These guys have no taste. The controller is like from the Jaguar Atari school of design. It's just absolute naffness. It's horrible. Absolutely horrible. I can never understand how people can't see things and think that genuinely looks terrible. It's a mess. It's all over the place.
You see, Mad Cats, like I think we've talked about it before, like Mad Cats recently started to get their design bang on. Like arcade sticks, they do pretty well. Like some of their more arcade focused hardware is pretty good now, but this is moving right on back to, I don't know, like the turbo button SNES like pads that you'd get, or the PlayStation ones that would give you slow-mo mode
with those terribly plasticky slidey click 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 things.
Oh.
I've just linked you, incidentally, a picture of the back end of it, because that wasn't in our story. You've got to check it out. Got a HDMI port, two USBs, headphone power, and everything else. Now, it's just like, it honestly, it gives you a headache to look at it, because it looks like it's been assembled by somebody drunk and possibly blind.
That is so scrappy.
Isn't that astonishing? Like, look at the USB ports. One of them is hanging out the back of it. and like the edge of the circles in which the power socket power plug goes, they haven't been machined properly, so there's like bits of plastic hanging off. It's amazing.
Is this a press release image as well?
Because these are the PR shots.
That HDMI port looks like someone's jammed it in and it's falling inside.
Yes, it really does. And it's like they've got every angle under the sun other than a right one.
Also, hold on a second. On the top left there, sorry that this is so
this is a video, this is a very video thing, but seriously, go to the site and look at it. You've got to have the picture in front of you to see what we're talking about. It's called the Mojo, M-O-J-O.
But there's a headphones jack.
There is.
Why would you need a headphones jack if it's sat underneath the television?
Yeah, I would use it as a line out to plug into a stereo or surround.
But you've got HDMI.
Yeah, but you don't want to use a HDMI run through because that's a pain in the ass.
Oh, what? Because no, I'm sorry. No, the kind of quality of audio that the games that are going to run on this thing, HDMI is more than fine. There hasn't been a headphone port on a system that sits under your TV since the Mega Drive. Like, this is...
Well, it did have a headphone port, didn't it? Amazing.
It did, yeah, at the front.
Amazing.
Yeah, but I missed
it. And a volume button as well. It did.
Which never got
used. This is
it's
shocking.
Just shabby. It's amazing. I can't believe. I assume
it looks like the kind of thing that when you do GCSE electronics or something at school you might make as your final year project or something.
What's inside it? Like, that's what matters. What is, like, what's the hardware running it?
Well, apparently they haven't given much information about it. They say they haven't told us the console specs. We know it'll have at least 16 gig of internal storage, will support micro SD cards, and be able to stream 1080p perfectly for things like Netflix and whatnot. And apparently they claim it will be the most powerful Android-based microconsole on the market.
Everything has Netflix these days. You can get Netflix on my bloody microwave soon. It's just bloody everywhere.
It's pretty good, though. I am a Netflix convert. It's pretty awesome. It's coming out later this year, and so I suggest you put a big red cross over those last 3 months of the year, just to remind you not to get one of these.
You can't.
No, I can't say that.
Cover it. It might be amazing.
You're right. It might be amazing.
They might have an exclusive game that rocks everyone's world.
Yes, it's true. Yeah, so ignore my callous and unfair prejudgment. But good grief.
Yeah. Actually, I think I know what happened to this. I think it was originally a uniform design, and then it got hit by that bolt of lightning in Manchester the other week. And
that was the explosion.
It's completely messed it up, and they've stuck with it.
Sticking with the whole Android theme we've got going on, one of your favourite... It's not a shmup, is it? It is a side-scrolling bit, but it's got top-down bits as well.
No, it's a shmup, and it's a side-scroller, and it's not top-down at all.
Oh, what's that top-down bit with the little girl, then?
That is...
That Mushimishisham Bug Panic.
Yes.
That is every Japanese game ever.
dare you, Keith? They have a rich and diverse collection of gaming genres and styles.
Listen, Phil. Look. That's Bug Panic. I haven't played that.
All right.
Death Smiles is a hardcore shmup.
Yes, we're talking about Death Smiles, the hardcore shmup in which you play a little witch on a broomstick blasting the crap out of everything. I can tell. This is one of the ones I want to play because after my Cine Mora review last week, I think it was, I sent it to you basically and said, check it out. And you went and got it, didn't you, Peter?
Yes, I did.
And have you played it yet?
No.
No, you haven't. Disgraceful. But I kind of fell in love with it and thought it was brilliant. And you said, well, if you like that kind of thing, you should probably look at Death Smiles. And it's just appeared on the Google Play Store. So if you haven't been familiar with it up until now and you're an Android lover, then you can grab it right this very second. It's something that we said was very good. And Harry very generously calls it a gothic bullet hell masterwork. We gave it a gold, saying everyone with a passing interest should try out this smart, compulsive, and thrilling blaster. So they appear to agree with you, Peter. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. However, ain't cheap. £7.99.
I mean you can buy the 360 game for £15 if you want instead.
That's true. As always, it's always a comparison thing with prices on the App Store and the Google Play Store.
Here's the thing, right? If you really want to grab it on mobile or tablet, that'd probably be the best way to play it, then do. But Cave usually 2 or 3 times a year drops the prices of their stuff. Like,
true.
They're pretty good for this kind of thing. So if you're sort of on the fence about it, mate, I would say leave it. I mean, there's a light version on iOS. Might be worth giving that a shot.
Well, actually, there are trial versions of both the games on Android as well.
Oh.
So you can give it a little taste and see if you're keen. And if you can't wait, you can cough up. If not, you can hang around for a sale, because like Pete says, yes, they do appear. You can also get Bug as well.
Yeah.
Let's move away from Android because it's got a little bit too much attention and onto the Vita, specifically Killzone Mercenary, which is a new first-person shooter in the Killzone canon arriving on Sony's lovely portable device, which you, I believe, Peter, have played.
Hi, yes, I have. So as I sort of said in my preview, like the big thing that Vita was always hailed to do is bring the first-person shooter to portable platforms and do it well.
Because of them twin sticks,
like. And the two games that we've kind of got for it that have tried to do that are Resistance, which is good, but it could have been way, way better. And Call of Duty, which I gave a 4.
Yeah, that's 4. Keith, have you ever got any of the first person shooters for Vita?
I didn't play Call of Duty. No,
I'm trying to remember what a Vita is.
I've played a rolling stock of bad big budget Vita games, including Assassin's Creed and so forth, and Uncharted and so forth, and decided no.
You're turned off by that thing.
You should play Call of Duty just to see it. I'm not going to... horrid. Right, so Killzone Mercenary is... It's basically like the third attempt that Sony's kind of got to deliver this promise.
Right.
And so we got given a preview build, and it's really good.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's ace. So we... I think it's called Lightning Strikes or something like that, the first level. The big change is that because, obviously, like, there's less power in the Vita than a PlayStation 3, the level that they show off is... You're not in, like, a massive war zone. You're trying to sort of infiltrate a base, and because of that... It feels more, not realistic, but it feels more, I don't want to say the word sensible, but like it feels like this could actually happen. Like you feel like a one-man army doing things that a one-man army might be able to do. It feels like you're in a sort of, again, another cliche, like it feels kind of action movie-esque in that there's lots of peaks and troughs and, you know, there's little bits of sabotage and then high action and then you're jetting down a wire line to get to another place and explosions and, you know, the game looks brilliant. It's the shooting feels really, really good. Like it still feels heavy. It's being made by a different developer. It's made by Guerrilla Cambridge this time around, not Guerrilla out. Yeah, because Guerrilla, I think, is out in, I want to say, Sweden? Or I think they're a Scandinavian company.
Well, I know, so they always use those terrible, like, Cockney stereotypes to portray the Hellgast.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
It's Ray Winston going, you slags.
And yeah, exactly. There's plenty of you slag in this game. There's plenty of that. Like, but it still feels weighty, but that weight actually really lends itself to portables because those sticks are brilliant, but they're not as accurate as like a full controller. Sure. And because it's slightly slower, you've got a bit more time to kind of take your time with it and react and that sort of thing. You know, obviously we still don't quite know like what the multiplayer is going to look like. And the other thing is like it's a Killzone story. Like I think Sony tries to position it as like this really brilliant narrative and like you want to care about it, but the stories never really deliver and it just feels very schlocky all the way through. But I've got like really high hopes for it. So
promising. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So when can we look forward to the full release of this here Killzone game, Peter?
Early September, September 6th is the release date for this one. Nice. We'll have a review up. Sony's pretty good, so it'll probably be a couple of days before that. So keep a lookout for it.
First up on this week's new releases, we have Riptide GP2, the sequel to the fairly successful and fairly well-regarded Jet Ski Racer. I've been playing it a lot this week, so I will save my opinions for a little later on. It is, in very quick summary, pretty good, though with a couple of caveats. You can get it for £1.99 or $2.99 at this very moment. Brand new stuff, looks dead pretty, but more details on that later. Next thing, Prince of Persia, The Shadow and the Flame. Now, I haven't played this yet, though I've downloaded it to start reviewing it soon. And apparently it's a reimagining of the MS-DOS game. There's a sequel to it. That's the sequel. Okay.
No, sorry. The sequel to Prince of Persia.
The original Prince of Persia.
Yes.
Right. Okay. Then. So they've basically redone it. Ubisoft have slapped a bunch of pretty 3D graphics on the top of it and kept the gameplay pretty much the same. You've got touchscreen gestures for controls. So it's all apparently quite nice and easy to pull off. It's not a digital thumbstick. It's lots of swiping and up and down and stuff, which tends to work a bit better if you do it right. Mark's played it a little bit, but he says it's shaping up to be quite good from what he gathers. I'll have a review up for it relatively soon. You can grab it right now for £1.99 or $2.99. Now, this made me smile. I've got my own issues with Square Enix and the way they deal with the mobile market. They've just released a game called Blood Mask, which is an Infinity Blade-style game.
Spelled it wrong.
I think that might have been a stylistic choice, Keith.
Dear. It's just like Mystique or whatever, isn't it? It's just
Are you talking about the X person, or are you talking about the girl band?
I'm talking about the girlfriend.
Oh, Keith, that's terrible. Come on.
Which, of course, we will have lost 90% of our audience.
Exactly. Here. Minus several points for that. You chose unwisely, sir. You went through the wrong door in the labyrinth, and you fell down that little pit with loads of hands outside of it.
It's probably a band called Labyrinth with a really bad spelling as well.
But... probably. Two Fs.
Yeah, there's that. there's that rapper who doesn't use a Y. Yeah, he doesn't use a Y. Yeah.
I like Subtract, who uses no vowels.
Yeah, that's cool. What, the DJ?
Yeah, I like him. He's good. Buy a vowel, why don't you? Anyway, Blood Masks come out, and it's another Infinity Blade clone, which in itself is pretty dull. It's got a lot of those mad Square Enix Japanese RPG overtones, so a silly histrionic plot, so lots of people with silly hair and turning around and posturing for the camera and all that jazz. The cool thing about it, and we picked up on this a little while back, is you can take a picture of yourself using your device's front-facing camera and superimpose your face onto the face of the avatar. And there's quite a lot of customization options to allow you to tweak the coloring and make it blend and actually make it look really good. Options which I see Mark hasn't bothered using at all.
Say, that one looks really bad. I thought it was just a really bad graphics, to be honest.
If you go to our new releases roundup, again, it'll be linked in. You can see a screenshot of the face that Mark has pulled for his avatar. And
we're sure that's his face. I'm not sure what that is.
That is Mark's face. He's basically done this mad, cheesy, gurning grin. And it looks like a completely different color from the rest of his skin. And it looks like it's like Silence of the Lambs styles. He's grafted someone else's face on top of his own. I don't know what the game's like, though. I've seen it in
Infinity Blade, apparently.
Well, yeah, but there's so many Infinity Blade clones, and most of them are completely dull and rubbish.
Yeah.
To be honest. Apparently this one, to make it a little bit different, you can actually explore a bunch of different worlds. So you're not limited. It's a futuristic setting where you're in Paris. Killing vampires.
Are there any chocobos?
Parisian chocobos?
What would a Parisian chocobo look like?
I don't know. I'm seeing a moustache because I'm...
A little twirly moustache.
And a beret, and a but then hat. I am basically seeing a stereotype.
Yeah, but a stereotype that is a chocobo.
Yeah, that's true. That's cool.
And that sounds like a really naff chocolate bar, I have to say.
Do you not know what a chocobo is?
It's some kind of gaming reference.
Keith, get out. Get out. Get out of this podcast, Keith.
That is a step too far.
Some
to not
kind of
know
video
what.
Game reference.
Although I would always call it a Chocobo.
I'm getting so angry at both of you.
That's reasonable. They never said it out loud in the game or in Final Fantasy VII or anything. I always, it just used Reddit and I read it as Chocobo.
Just Googled it. It appears to be some kind of yellow bird.
The readers already know this, Keith.
Can we
the
move
listeners
on?
Already know this.
Can we move on?
No, they don't.
Yes, they do, because they like games.
I like games, but there's a fine line between games and Final Fantasy, isn't there? So,
one of the most popular RPGs ever released, Final Fantasy VII.
Okay, I'll explain.
One of the most critically acclaimed video games of all time.
There's a fine line between games and RPGs, then that's probably what I meant. I'm shoving Zelda in with that as well.
We
need to move on.
All right then. Well, you can get Blood Mask. It might be good. It might not be. It's quite expensive, though. £4.99. $6.99. Oh, yeah, it's made by Square Enix. That's why. Silly me. There you go. Okay, Sky Tourist by some dude called Alexander Lading.
Lading.
I'm going with Lading.
Lading?
No, Lading would have two Ds, wouldn't it? Lading.
Lading.
I don't know. Alexander Lading. I don't know. That's how a Parisian chocobo would pronounce it. You can get it for 69p, 99 cents. And what it is, I've looked at a little video of this. It's actually quite ingenious. It's another use of the touchscreen controls to do something a little bit different. You have got two rocket ships on either side of the screen. So you place your thumb upon each rocket, right, as you're holding it. And there is a trailing line that connects the two rockets together. Dangling from this line is a little dude who's got a hook over the top of his helmet. Don't say anything, Keith, and is attached to the little string by it. So what you have to do is everything's moving upwards and you need to either raise or lower each rocket ship. And so if you put the left one up high and the right one down low, obviously he'll start scooting down the zip line. And if you pull the left one down, put the right one up, he'll start, going back right to left the other way. And by using that movement, you have to guide him past obstacles, windmills and platforms and little creatures and stuff like that, which is I've not seen before. That's quite clever and quite cool.
This looks utterly charming.
Yeah. Apparently it's quite tough. to do. But it's just, you know, this is someone who's gone, right, we've got a touchscreen interface. How can we do something a bit different? And they've come up with something a bit different. And I'm all for that. I think that's great. Mm. Again, Mark's played a little bit of it. It says it is actually quite good fun, quite tough, a bit interesting. We'll have a review for it up very soon, but 69p99 if you fancy a cheeky punt. What else have we got? It's all a bit blah, the rest of it, I've got to be honest. This one looks okay. It's called Chillaxian, which, yeah, it's based on a American saying where they've taken relax and chill and glued it together and put Ian at the end.
Yeah.
I'm very disappointed.
It's made by Mad Garden, isn't it? The
Punch Quest guys. Yeah. Okay, well, that gives it slightly more interest. But apparently it was very, very quickly made. It's basically, it's a vertically scrolling shooter, by the look of it. Because it's called Chillaxian, it's not super hard or bullet hell or anything. It's pretty relaxing and groovy. So it's all right for what it is. £1.49 or $1.99. Go for it. Here's our regular Chillingo update. Iron Force is Chillingo's version of World of Tanks, essentially a free-to-play tank combat game with a big online section, which apparently isn't all that polished. For example, the tracks on the side of the tank don't go round when you move.
Have you seen it running? It is woeful.
Oh.
Are they mini tanks?
Actually, compared to the size of the trees, they look like little pocket tanks, don't they?
The scale and the wall and the boxes.
What?
Are these some kind of mini tank? It looks terrible from that screenshot.
Apparently, everything's behind paywalls. And within 2 minutes of playing, Mark was pestered for coin. And so he says, get stuffed. But it's free. And if you like weird, out-of-scale tank games that pester you for money all the time, you know.
That don't look very good.
Don't look very good at all.
Actually, all the rest of the games, having a scroll down, don't look very good, do they?
No, this is all blah. However, there is some Vita action going on as well. That was our iOS little rundown. On the Vita, you can get Stealth Inc., which used to be called Stealth Bastard.
We're allowed to say that, we are, aren't we?
Yeah, Bastard's okay.
Okay.
We're pushing it this week, aren't we?
We are.
I'd like to be unclassified, though. Not so we can swear all the time, just so we can drop in a well-placed, you know, gratuitous swear word. Yes, bum.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Stealth Inc. used to be called Stealth Bastard, and in order to get it onto the Vita, they had to change the name, because that might have been fine with the PC indie crowd, but Sony were having none of it. So they actually did a little competition where you could write in with your suggestion. And so the winner of this has been Stealth Inc. It's called A Clone in the Dark.
I like that bit, but the ink bit's a bit boring.
It's got nothing to do with Alone in the Dark, though.
Yeah, but is it a clone and they are in the dark? He's a clone and it is in the dark, so there's a thematic link there with the words. No, I realise it's not survival horror.
There's not a thematic link, it's just the words sound the same.
That's good enough, apparently. you can get it right now. It's £7.99 for, or $9.99. Yes, I know. It costs monies.
What world is Sony living in, honestly?
Square Enix's world.
£8?
apparently they do. It's a sneaky, stealthy platformer. It got reviewed pretty well on the PC. I think people had some issues with the second half not living up to the first half, or limbo syndrome, as I'll call it. you can grab that right now. The other thing you can get is something called Mojong Royal Towers.
Mahjong,
whatever. There's too many H's, and H's and J's have no business being
Have you not heard of Mahjong?
You haven't done enough Java reviews, Dave. Yeah. You'd have played several of these.
Oh, I've managed to avoid it. I guess that's good. That's come out, which apparently is a cheap-looking £2.39 Mahjong.
£2.39 is not cheap for one of them.
If you happen to be in the PlayStation Plus club and you're European, you can look forward to no discounts whatsoever.
Hooray!
However, if you are an American, then you can get the PSP game Metal Slug XX for free.
Europeans are Americans, then. Is that what they are?
Yeah, we're Americans and they're Americans. They do say like motivational stuff like that, don't they?
American, yeah.
It's great. I like it. When I say like, I obviously mean to test. But I did know someone, diverting on a tangent again, who worked in Asda, which for you Americans is our equivalent of Walmart. And when they started each working day, they would do this like group chant thing.
No.
Yeah,
no. They did. I have a friend who worked in Asda, and it was when they got bought out by Walmart. It lasted about 2 weeks before people stopped doing that.
A bunch of Brits who don't want to be there, who don't give a monkey's about the brand or their job, going, working for minimum wage. Like,
you have to do the minimum wage chant and do high fives and secret handshakes and go,
stop
woo.
It.
And no, we just, no. I could just see everyone just looking at each other with dead eyes going, nah, sorry, mate. No, we're not doing that.
Oh, my God.
British people don't even want to talk, let alone sing within a circle about a supermarket.
Oh.
So that's your new releases for this week. But I think it's probably time that we all gather at the chamber door so that we can...
Come sit upon my throne of gifts.
Welcome, peasants. Welcome to the chamber wherein lies the throne of games. This week, I am already sitting on the throne of games because it's mine. And yeah. Screw you guys. But I'm going to talk about Riptide GP2. I mentioned it earlier. It is the sequel to that there jet ski futuristic game. It shares a lot in common, really, in its physics at least, with the Zero G racers. It's funny how the water effect of, you know, scooting through water on a jet ski feels a lot like the anti-gravity racers like Wipeout. It is very pretty. If you've ever played the first game, you'll obviously know that it's kind of a handsome looking thing. And they have made it look even better this time around. There are a bunch of tournaments you can go through, about 8 tournaments or so, each of which have between like 4 and 6 different races you can go through. You've got elimination races and straight up normal races. You've got stunt challenges and multiplayer as well, online multiplayer.
Now, that's what I was going to ask you a question about that.
Okay.
So have you managed to try the multiplayer?
I have.
Okay. Is the promise of the Google Plus cross-platform integration stuff, is that in there at the moment?
I have absolutely no idea, because I was able to play the multiplayer for about 3 races, because I presumably, because it was the day of launch and not many people were on it, and I could only get 3 races together, and that was with me hanging and waiting for like 5 minutes, 6 minutes at a time just to get some people to join.
That's annoying.
But it does work. I just don't think there were enough people around when I was doing it, you know. By tomorrow, it'll be fine.
When you were racing, was it laggy? Or
no, it was good. It was good.
Oh, right. Okay.
I mean, granted, I only saw a bit of them because I was in the lead the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Sure, of course. But no, it wasn't laggy. It kept up just fine. When it comes to the actual mechanics, now, the steering's really good. Actually, it's got some of the best tilt controls I have ever used. I'm not necessarily a big fan of tilt controls in driving games, but here it really suits it. I think probably it has something to do with the fact that these jet skis, it looks like, you know, obviously you're turning wheels, but you're turning steering wheels, sorry, but there's that lean effect that you have. Same thing with Wipeout and the same thing with motorbike racing. There's that lean going on, and it sort of suits it that you're, you know, turning the whole screen, you're turning the whole unit around to steer into a corner. And it feels good, and it's very sensitive. It's really good. You can do a lot of very precise turns with it. The core of the game is really the stunt system. So in order to power up your boost, which you need if you're going to get to the front of the pack and stay there, you have to do a bunch of stunts off of ramps. And these are executed by putting your thumbs on either side of the screen and either like pushing both up or both down or one left and one right or in opposite directions or some combination of those. And you'll do a cool little stunt that'll power up your boost, and then you can land and go press the boost button and off you pop. Issues I've had with it are it's kind of grindy. Which I didn't really expect, given the fact that it's a premium game. You pay £1.99 or $2.99 for it, and then you race through the first 4 races, and as soon as you get to the first challenge, which involves stunts, you can't get the gold because you don't know enough stunts at that point, as in you're not capable of doing enough stunts. In order to get more stunts unlocked, you have to play through and get experience and unlock the points to do it. Which requires more play. In order to get better upgrades for your jet ski, you need to play in order to grind out currency. And if you're going to compete in the second or third tier races, you need to have your craft upgraded to a certain point, or you're simply just not in the competition.
So is this a paymium game?
I didn't pay anything for it, and I've got quite far. To be fair, it's worse at the beginning than it is when you get to the middle and towards the end. Like, it's a weird, there's a kind of a steep curve at the beginning where you walk in and you suddenly realize you can't get gold in these races. And that's immediately kind of disheartening. Because at the beginning, you kind of want to be learning the ropes and you can win gold and they make it easy and then the difficulty ramps up usually. For it to be in a situation where, like, no matter, even if I drive a perfect lap, I'm not going to get gold because my engine isn't fast enough or my top speed hasn't been increased high enough, that feels like a bit of a kick in the teeth. It's disheartening. However, once you do get upgraded, you have to grind the first few levels a bit, get your upgrades on, and then get into the higher tiers. You become competitive, and it becomes a little bit easier. The rewards are greater for winning the races. You can buy more craft, and it sort of becomes a bit more fun and opens up. But at the beginning, it was kind of, you know, on the borderline, like, I'm not sure this is wise. This might be a bit off-putting for people, because I don't just want to play the first four levels again and again. It's not too bad, but considering you pay a decent amount for the game, I was surprised that it was a little bit on the grindy side. If it was freemium or if it was Real Racing 3, I'd totally understand. That said, it's really good fun. It really is genuinely good fun. I played it like all of last night and a big chunk of today as well. It's really entertaining. The physics are great. And if you... biggest cop-out ever. If you like the first one, you like this one. But you will. And if you like those zero-G anti-grav races like Wipeout and stuff like that, this is actually one of the better versions of that style of racing. Because people have done lots of Wipeout clones and they're generally a bit shabby. And even though this isn't on the water, but and you know, not an anti-grav racer, they have a lot in common. The beginning might be a bit off-putting, but it's worth sticking with it. I'm going to hop off now, and Peter, why don't you have a seat on the throne of games?
Okay, let me just very quietly go over here and get a seat on there.
I'm on the throne, and now I can shill all of the amazing products, or at
Jill,
least one of them.
Jill, guards! Guards!
No! Stop
dethrone
it.
Him!
Okay, no, right, listener, while the guards are coming,
hurry up.
We have just released a guide for the fantastic, and not at all naff like we were talking about last week, Badland. So we've released the official guide to Badland. You can go and grab it for your iPad from the iTunes store right now, and it is free. It's totally free, so you can go and grab that right now. Okay, I'm getting down. I'm gonna sit down and behave now. You can call off the guards.
Too late. One of them's already working its way through your ankle.
Oh, that's horrid.
Well, I'm sorry. If you're going to hijack the throne, then this is what you get. Heresy.
No, that's fine. Okay, now video games. Attack of the Friday Monsters, A Tokyo Tale, is a 3DS game. It's from the Guild 2 collection, which was an effort in Japan to get together a lot of very big name game creators and produce a collection of games under one banner, Guild 2, that were interesting creatively. Mm-hmm. And this is the next release. I think there's one more to come, potentially. I might be wrong on that. It's a visual novel, essentially. Not the kind that Chunsoft put out, so it's not first person. It's actually played from the third person. So you wander around a very small town, a Japanese town in the 1970s. You're a child. And it looks a little bit like a 3D RPG, you know. You sort of wander about, but there's no battles or anything like that. You're just progressing a very linear story forward, finding the next people that you need to talk to. And very occasionally you play a game called Monster Cards, which is sort of like Rochambeau. It's kind of like Rock, Paper, Scissors. But a kind of moved on to cards, essentially. Yeah, so there's very little game there. The very small amounts of game are these, as I say, the monster cards, which is really just kind of a game of luck. But you also have to find these tiny little shining balls of light, which are called monster glims. And if you connect enough of those together, then you get a new card.
I can actually hear the crystallization noise of Keith's eyes glazing over at this point.
Yeah,
I went a long time ago.
So the game itself is very linear. It's a few hours, I suppose. There was a bit of a Twitter furore earlier on today when basically some people on a website said that £8 or whatever it is for a 3 or 4 hour long game was ridiculous. I personally feel like that's the wrong attitude to have.
I paid that for Limbo and it was totally worth it.
Absolutely. And
it's only 3 hours.
It was... So this this is very much about its story. And as I say, like, you are, you know, you're playing a child in 70s Japan, and it's very rural. It's almost like you can kind of feel like industry creeping in, like, very heavily.
Mm-hmm.
It's about innocence, and it's about exploration, but it's also about monsters. So the whole concept is that this group of young children believe that this small town is plagued every Friday by, like, a Godzilla, I suppose.
So what is Mr. Godzilla doing, like, Monday through Thursday? Has he got another job?
Well, now this is it. So this is part of the story. And the whole point is that you try and find out what it is. And for a lot of the game, it walks a very interesting line between, clearly this isn't happening. Like, as an adult, you see it and you go, well, clearly this isn't real because it's grounded in reality and this can't be a reality. Mm-hmm. And then part of it is grounded in the imagination of the children. So you sort of, you see it from two perspectives at the same time.
Okay.
So, for example, you go up to a well and these kids say that every once in a while a monster can be heard in the well. And at a later point in the game, you go to this pipe entrance and you shout into it. And it turns out that actually this well is in some way connected to this pipe. And the echo of the sound transforms, like, any voice into something that sounds like a monster's roar. So these kids are kind of making this up at the same time. Or are they? So it's about innocence and about being in a sleepy town and what that does to kids. And it's not negative, it's just creative, I suppose.
Is it compelling then? Is there much game involved, or are you just
there's very little game involved, and the map tells you where you need to go next. Yeah. But actually, if you like the story of something like a Virtue's Last Reward, which is a Chunsoft game, for example,
mm-hmm.
Or any of the visual novels like that, Hakuoki, for example, if you played that on the PSP, thank you. Then this is that, but in 3D third person. And
do you recommend? Or
yeah, I really do recommend it.
You would. Okay.
This is one of those reviews where, you know, there's this theory that you can't be objective in a review because it is personal taste. This is one of those games that I can very easily see in getting a 5 out of 10 and a 9 out of 10 on different days from different.
Sure, sure, yeah. But it's an acquired taste, perhaps.
It's a very acquired taste. And yeah, if you want to see, like, a visual novel, which is a really good step into that very strange, very niche world.
Okay, very, very good. All right, then. Well, if I ask you to disembark and watch your step now, because you've got a broken ankle, because we've had to hobble you because you abused the Throne of Games and its true purpose.
I might do it again at some point.
Well,
not today, though. Not today. Don't.
We hobbled him very quietly there. He didn't flinch at all. And he's...
That's because I'm stronger than you guys. Actually,
his delivery just carried on.
I'm hard and double hard.
Double hard. Well, I bet your dad's stronger than my dad as well.
Yeah.
Good. All right. Glad we settled that. Which leaves Keith.
Hello. Keith,
care to take a seat?
I'd love to.
Marvelous. Mind the blood, though, because and that foot that's just lying by the side.
Hello. Do you want me to talk now?
Yes, that would be marvellous.
I've been playing something where you shoot people. Not people, aliens. I've been playing Halo Spartan Assault.
Ah, now this is good, because this is the first thing we're going to say on the Pocket Gamer podcast that has to do with Windows 8.
Woo! Yeah,
Windows 8 and Windows Phone both.
Indeedy.
I've been playing on Surface though.
Have you? Okay.
Because I can't remember if I spoke about this last week after we finished recording or during recording. I got to play it briefly when I was down at develop, and it was obvious that it was good. And yeah, it seemed to run just as well on both the phone and the tablet. But I've downloaded it on the I was sent the code actually for the tablet. I can't lie, that's the reason I got it on the tablet. But I know actually that on Windows 8, I don't know if it's possible now, but I think it's possible in the future, one of the two, that you can use a control pad.
Which
would be interesting. But obviously, I haven't done that. I've been playing. I was more interested to see how, because it's a twin stick. So having played a lot of bad twin sticks with awful on-screen controls that are just completely unresponsive and stuff, this is very impressive actually. It's you forget that you're not holding a pad after a while.
So it's a twin stick shooter in the vein of, you know, Gun Bros.
You run around with the one on the left and you shoot with the one on the right.
Nice.
But actually you can put your fingers anywhere and it responds. It kind of has and initially has a little guide there to tell you left and right, but you can put either side of the, you know, it understands what you're doing. And yeah, so the idea is, the concept is, it's set between Halo 3 and Halo 4, but it exists as like a training, a VR simulation thing. So you play through as if you're training yourself up to join the UNSC or whatever it's called.
Okay.
Through historical missions that happened between the two games. And they're very, it's very clever. All the missions are very succinct, actually. So it, you know, it is built with mobile in mind. It's not a big long thing where each thing's 20 minutes long. They're all very short little top down shooty things. I mean, it's Halo. It feels like Halo. You're jumping in turrets and you're getting in buggy things and driving around. I mean, it understands. One of the big appeals to Halo was that it kind of allowed that kind of interaction the way that a lot of other FPSs didn't. And it wants you to kind of immerse yourself in it in the same way. And obviously all the alien things, whatever they're called in Halo, are...
The Covenant. Covenant,
yeah, well, them lot. And all the different types. I mean, it, you know, all the noises there, the way they... It's, the AI is actually rather good.
Mm-hmm.
It does kind of react. Less so perhaps your colleagues, but the AI, the enemies... does react to kind of the way you approach it, and like Halo lovers of old, it is kind of split into little sections rather than just shoving enemies at you all at once. You kind of progress through, and you know, there's little bits to hide behind and there's little bits for you to hide behind, and it kind of makes it very manageable. And you're set tasks for each kind of little level, take this down or survive. Some of them are literally just survive because some of the missions don't go so well. And it has this great scale to it, even though actually physically you're playing along a flat level, essentially, that exists on its own. They often put it like you're on a cliff top, so you can see below this great battle with ships landing and dropping off troops and shooting or whatever at the same time as you're having your own little battle on the top. So even though it's actually quite a refined little thing.
That's quite cool. I like that.
You feel like you're in this big battle where you can see everything else going on. And visually, it does look really good, and it's very, very smooth to run. Certainly the smoothest thing I've played on Windows 8, actually, that calls for that much grunt. I mean, I'm anywhere near finished. I was kind of playing on this afternoon, having installed it actually early in the week, and I kind of not had time to get around to playing it. But so I played it this afternoon, and it is, I don't think there's any chance that anyone who has even a passing influence in Halo would be disappointed by it. It is a quality thing, but... they completely understand what the platform is and what people want on that platform, rather than, dare I say, in a kind of Vita way, trying to drop these massive games that go on for hours that, you know, that you'd rather play on a console. This kind of takes that big scope but cuts it down into these small, manageable chunks. So you dip in and out of it, and you don't really... And I think it's because it's taken this VR mission approach of cutting them down in the way that it's trying to train you, that it can get away with that. If it was trying to like have a massive plot that, you know, if it was like Halo 5 or something and they'd made it mobile and all the missions only lasted a couple of minutes, you'd be thinking, this is a bit strange. But because it's kind of bills itself as this, you know, we're training you up, each level gets a little bit harder, and you know, it's the perfect approach to that, with retaining the same universe but presenting it in a manageable, fun way for mobile. It's really impressive. It's
How much is it? I assume it's a premium title.
It is a premium title. It's I'm not sure if it works like other Windows 8, Windows Phone 8 games, where when you buy one version, the other one is automatically free. I think on tablet it was $5.49.
Okay.
I think it's the same on Windows Phone.
It's about $8 or something, I suppose.
Yeah, I forget what the other game was, but there was another game that stretched across to the release by Microsoft, where if you bought one, the other one was then free on the other. I suspect it does work like that. I might have to check, because you can save your progress on one and pick you up on the other. So
that cloud save stuff. Okay, but two thumbs up from Andrew there, then.
I'd give it, you know, toes up as well.
Toes too. Well, not bad. You can also have Peter's toe as well, his extra one that we lopped off.
Mm-hmm. It's a bit green now. I don't want to...
Oh, it's always been that colour.
Excellent. Thank you, Keith, for your breakdown there. And thank you, lovely listeners, for sticking with us. You can come and join us next week for even more Pocket Gamer-related chatter. Find us on Twitter and Facebook and all that good stuff. We'll see you very soon. Take it easy. Bye-bye.
Bye. Clear off.